a summer storm rolls across the outskirts of Tokyo. Inside a quiet room, lit only by the glow of an aging CRT monitor, Yukihiro Matsumoto sits with a feeling he can't shake.
As he introduced, I'm Mats, Yukihiro Matsumoto, but it's kind of difficult to remember my Japanese names.
Programming shouldn't feel this cold. The tools he uses each day work, but they don't feel human. They don't feel warm. They don't make him happy. He places his hands above the keyboard and whispers a question to the silence. Why can't programming be joyful? That question becomes his compass. He starts reading everything he can get his hands on. Perl's wild tricks, Python's clean lines, Smalltalk's radical object purity. Each language teaches him something, yet each leaves a missing piece. Because Perl is powerful but messy. Python is elegant but strict. Smalltalk is inspiring but trapped in its own world. So he starts sketching a new language, not to replace others, but to express a different philosophy. A language that treats the programmer with kindness. A language where elegance isn't an accident, but the foundation. Late nights blur into early mornings as he writes the first interpreter. He does it quietly, without a company, without funding, without expectation. Just a stubborn belief that programming can feel better. By 1993, his new creation starts coming alive on the screen. Now he needs a name. Something warm, vivid, human. He chooses Ruby. Early users arrive through Japanese mailing lists. Developers curious about this new object-oriented scripting language, built by a soft-spoken engineer who talks more about happiness than performance. They try it. They break it. They email him bug reports at all hours. Mats replies to almost every message personally, grateful for the attention. Their feedback pushes Ruby forward. They shape methods, syntax rules, conventions. Ruby becomes a conversation, not a decree. By 1995, Mats announces Ruby publicly. The world barely notices. But the few who do notice feel something unusual. Ruby doesn't fight you. Ruby feels like it wants you to succeed. And that emotional response spreads slowly post by post, forum by forum, IRC channel by IRC channel. Then something unexpected happens. As Ruby trickles into English-speaking blogs, word begins to travel faster. People outside Japan start discovering this strange, poetic scripting language. They translate documentation. They write tutorials. The global community grows, small but fiercely devoted. Ruby becomes a kind of refuge for developers who feel boxed in by the harshness of the 90s programming culture. But with visibility comes tension. Some early critics accuse Ruby of being too slow, too loose, too idealistic. C and Java programmers scoff at the idea that developer happiness should matter. Even among fans, arguments flare over design choices. When Mats emphasizes the principle of least surprise, some users misunderstand it as a promise the language can't always keep. Others complain about inconsistencies between versions, especially as Ruby transitions from 1.6 to 1.8. More friction appears when the community outside Japan accelerates faster than the tools created for it. Documentation becomes fragmented. English resources lag behind new features. Some developers argue that Ruby is chaotic compared to Python. Others fight over package managers before Ruby Gems becomes the standard. And then the biggest controversy of all begins to form not in the Ruby language itself, but in the ecosystem growing around it. Years before Ruby on Rails explodes into global fame, a small internal conversation simmers. Should Ruby remain a quiet craftsman's language? Or should it aim for mainstream adoption, even if that means friction, criticism, and compromise? Some early contributors worry that rapid growth could distort Mats's original vision. Others argue that Ruby should be bold enough to stand on the global stage. Through it all, Mats remains calm. He keeps refining Ruby with a gentle philosophy: make code feel good. Make code feel natural. The human matters more than the machine. As the late 90s turn into the early 2000s, Ruby becomes a hidden gem beloved by some, ignored by many. But beneath the surface, something is building. A shift in the developer world. A hunger for tools that value speed, elegance, and creative freedom. Nobody knows it yet, but Ruby is on the edge of a transformation. Before we continue, a quick but important note, because shipping isn't just writing code. It's making sure the code actually matches what you meant, especially when an AI agent is doing the typing. Enter Tracer, the sponsor of this video, a spec-driven workflow that starts where most agent tools skip, with a real plan. You describe your task at a high level. Tracer forms a deep understanding of your codebase and clarifies requirements by asking you questions. Tracer generates phase-by-phase plans with structure, code references, and clear steps, which can be handed off to any coding agent with a single click. Tracer closes the loop by verifying the work your agents did, ensuring they followed the plan and did not introduce any bugs into your code. Want full autopilot? Turn on YOLO mode to automatically orchestrate planning, code generation, and review phase after phase, letting your agents tackle large tasks while always staying on track. Learn more at tracer.ai, and now, back to the story. Thousands of miles away, in a small web design company in Chicago called 37 Signals, a different story is unfolding. They're a tiny team overworked, underfunded, trying to build a new project management tool called Basecamp. They need a framework that doesn't fight them. Nothing they try feels right. One of their developers, a young Danish programmer named David Heinemeier Hansen, begins experimenting with Ruby. Immediately, he feels something shift. Ruby doesn't just let him write code. It lets him sculpt ideas. It frees him. It gives him a sense of creative control he didn't realize he was missing. He starts extracting the core pieces of Basecamp and assembling them into a framework. A skeleton. A structure. Something that turns Ruby into a full-power web development engine. He shares internal snippets with the team, a simple DSL, elegant routes, conventions that reduce decisions. Everything feels smoother, faster, more alive. But a question soon emerges: what do you call this thing? At first, it's just an internal toolkit. No name. No branding. Just a collection of folders powering Basecamp behind the scenes. But as it grows, as the architecture becomes clearer, as the conventions settle into place, it needs an identity. It needs a name that captures what it does. David looks at the language beneath it. Ruby. A gem. A jewel. A name already full of warmth and meaning. But his framework isn't a gem. It's a path. A track. A structure that gives Ruby a direction to travel. And the metaphor appears almost instantly. A rail. A track. A guided path that lets Ruby move faster than anyone expected. The name forms in his mind like a spark. Rails. And the pairing feels perfect. Ruby on rails. Because Ruby is the language. Rails is the track it travels on. Together they suggest motion, momentum, speed. The idea that Ruby, when placed on this new framework, doesn't walk. It glides. Rails is opinionated. Structured. Narrow on purpose. It gives Ruby a clear, powerful path. And if you follow it, you move fast. David shares Rails publicly in 2004. The reaction is shock. Developers have never seen anything like this. Some call it revolutionary. Others call it dangerous. Some say it's too magical. Others say it's the future. Blogs erupt. Forums explode. Developers switch careers. People who barely knew Ruby existed are suddenly installing it, learning it, teaching it. Ruby transforms from a niche Japanese scripting language into a global movement. But success sparks backlash. As Rails adoption surges, critics attack Ruby with renewed intensity. Enterprise developers claim it won't scale. Performance skeptics call Ruby too slow. Some argue that its dynamic features trade correctness for convenience. Others say Rails encourages bad architecture. With Twitter, GitHub, Shopify, Hulu, and countless startups running on Rails, the pressure grows. Memory issues in Ruby 1.8 spark long-standing jokes. Garbage collection pauses become notorious. The language begins tripping over its rapid success. Then comes the painful transition. Ruby 1.9. Faster, more correct, more modern. Launches in 2007. But it's incompatible with much of the ecosystem. Gems break. Apps break. Tools break. Developers split between 1.8 and 1.9. The community fractures into debates over performance, correctness, compatibility, and the future of Ruby itself. Meanwhile, alternative implementations appear. JRuby promises enterprise-grade scalability on the JVM. Rubinius aims for a self-hosting Ruby with JIT compilation. Both push the ecosystem forward, revealing weaknesses in MRI but also inspiring new optimizations. Inside the core team, a quiet reconstruction begins. Ruby 2.0, released in 2013 for the language's 20th anniversary, restores stability and backward compatibility. Incremental garbage collection reduces pauses. Each new release brings improvements: better memory management, faster string handling, smarter method dispatch. Rails evolves alongside it, absorbing MERB concepts, adding action cable, introducing API mode, modernizing the toolchain. But the biggest shift arrives when Mats announces Ruby 3.0. An ambitious plan to make Ruby 3 times faster by version 3.0. Skeptics dismiss it. Forums mock it. performance-focused languages surge in popularity, and Ruby appears to be fading. Then Shopify enters the picture. Their engineering team invests in the language at a level few companies ever have. They build new JIT compilers. They optimize the VM. They create YJIT and ahead of time JIT that dramatically boosts real-world performance. MJIT improves too. Garbage collection grows faster and smarter. Ruby 3.0 delivers on the promise for many workloads. Suddenly, the old joke Ruby is slow feels outdated. Meanwhile, Rails reinvents itself again. Hotwire, Turbo, Stimulus, and Rails 7 rewrite the expectations for full-stack development. The framework sheds its dependencies on Node, Webpack, and complex tooling. It leans into simplicity again, the same simplicity that made it famous. By the early 2020s, something unexpected happens. Ruby becomes cool again, not as a trend, but as a craft. Startups rediscover how fast a small team can move with Rails. Senior developers return to Ruby for the joy it gives them. The community grows quieter, more mature, more confident. And by 2025, Ruby stands not as the hottest technology, nor the default choice, but as something deeper, a language that survived hype cycles, outlasted predictions, and proved that a focus on human happiness is not naive. It's sustainable. Millions still depend on it. Billions in commerce flow through Rails apps every day. The controversies, the debates, the performance wars, the split between versions, all of it shaped the language. Ruby didn't avoid conflict. Ruby grew because of it. And through every error, every criticism, every reinvention, one philosophy remained untouched, typed into a dusty CRT monitor decades earlier. Programming should make people happy. That simple idea carried Ruby from a quiet room in Japan to a global movement to the stable, joyful, resilient place it holds in 2025. Still running forward, still evolving, still guided by the rails laid down long ago.